Okay, we're going to start here at the bottom of Kuf Samach Chedamot Be'at, just because this sugya is really going to relate to this memra in the beginning, all through today's daf. So we'll start from there. Tanu Rabbanan, Hare Shebava Amar Avad Shtar Chuvi. Comes along and says, look, I had a document, a credit document, and it was lost. Avo Pishar Mu'edim Anu Katavnu V'chatamnu V'natnanu Lo. We did this. We agreed. There was such a document, and we have perfect evidence of the fact there was such a transaction. Ein kotvim lo et hashtar. Nevertheless, we do not write for him a second document. But medvarim amurim. When is that true? Bishtari halva. That comes to loan documents. We're doing this. Aval shtari mekach umem kar kotvim chutz min acharyut shebo. When it comes to transactional documents, that we do, except we leave out the acharyut. An encumberment or responsibilities that the seller has to replace the land if it's taken from the lokeach. So they were willing to repeat or write numerous documents or more than one document. Even when it comes to shtari mekach umemkar, we do not write duplicate contracts. Even if he says he lost it, we do not write or replace the contract. Someone who gives a gift to his friend, zirlo at the shtar, and he returns the shtar, chazra matanato. The matana goes back. The matana stays in place. So that this last section of the brisa will actually be discussed in tomorrow's daf. So we'll leave it for that. It will just suffice to say now that, at least according to the Rashbam, and the second explanation in Tosafot, this case is talking about a case of otiyot niknot mimsira, the ability to transact or transfer ownership of an item through the shtar itself. And therefore, if someone is granted a gift with the shtar, we're choshesh that the recipient of the gift handed the shtar back to the mocher, handed it back to the seller, I'm sorry, here is the grantor of the gift. When he hands it back, according to Shimon Gamliel, that'll be a reversal of the transaction. Because when he hands the shtar, it's the equivalent of selling him the property or giving him the property. Whereas according to Chamim, handing back the shtar has no bearing on the transaction. Handing a shtar, you're not allowed to transact, or you can't transact in intangible items or that which is written in a contract. And therefore, the handing back of the shtar has no bearing on the gift. Again, we'll leave that piece for tomorrow. What we're discussing today is really the first part of this brisa, which is the Rabbanan say, when it comes to shtari chov, we do not allow you to write a duplicate document. When it comes to shtari mekach umemkar, we do allow you to do it. So now the Gemara goes to why. Amar, chutz mi'achrayut shebo, my time up. Why don't we like, when we allow you to duplicate a document of sale, why don't we allow you to put in achrayut? If the original document had responsibility or recourse to the seller, why when we rewrite the document do we not put that recourse in for the buyer again? So he says, because Dilma Azil Balchov, Tarif Le Lahat. Because maybe the creditor, a creditor of, let's call this, Ruvain had a piece of property that he sold to Shimon. Now Shimon says he lost his contract and he wants a duplicate of the contract in order to have evidence that he bought the property from Ruvain. Along comes Levi, and Levi says, listen, I'm a creditor to Ruvain, and I'm going to take this property from you, Shimon. I'm taking the property away from you. And now Shimon has recourse in his document. The recourse in his document is going to allow him to go and then collect from other lukuchot, other buyers from Reuven that were after him. Any buyer after him are now subjugated to his claim. And since they are beneath his claim, he can go and take it away from them. So what's going to happen in this situation? Levi's going to come along and say, listen, Shimon, give me the property. I'm the Balchov. I'm taking your property. Shimon will go and take from some lukuchot, take the property, and go ahead and say, all right, fine. So he'll go back to Ruvain's other buyers and say, I'll get my property back because they have achrayut here. Then the balchov and the person, this lokeach, who has achrayut here, will make a little partnership between them. Because it happens to be that this individual, Shimon, has two contracts. Two contracts that say he purchased the property from Ruvain with achrayut, with recourse. So what he does is the first time they show up, he takes the contract out with the recourse and says, give me my money back. So he says, listen, Mr. Balchov, listen to me. You come here, you made your first claim, I went, you took the property from me, and then I went and grabbed it from the other lukuchot. Now listen, leave me to live in this property for another 4 or 5 years. 4 or 5 years from now, you come back with your credit document again, which is going to be the question tomorrow, where does he have another credit document? But assume he can whip out the credit document again and try to take it from me again. I have a second contract of sale, which they took the first one from me, but I have a second one I'm going to go take from the Kuchot again. So we're worried about such a case. So we only write a replica or a duplicate contract for the purchaser here, for Shimon, without Achrayut. Because if it's written without Achrayut, we don't have to worry about him going after other Lukuchot or disadvantaging other buyers that came after him. Because if he really lost it, he has a contract that's evidence to the sale. He doesn't have recourse. That's the loss that he took because he lost his contract. On the other hand, if he's lying to us, and now he has two contracts, only one contract has recourse in it. The second one does not have recourse. And we don't worry. A contract without recourse is not going to affect anybody else. So we're not worried about it. So now he says, this is what the Gemara, I spoke that outside, and now the Gemara asks this. Why do we have to say, Amar Mar, Chutz Mechayut Shebo, Mai Taima? So Amar Rav Safa, Lefishin, Kovim, Shnei Shtarot, Osel De'achat. We do not write two contracts on the same field. We will not replicate a contract for the same transaction on the same field with recourse in it. Why? Dilma Azil Balchov. Maybe the Balchov will come. Balchov here is Levi. Vitori Filei Lahai. And take the property away from Shimon. He takes the property away from Shimon, and then Vazil Hai, Shimon will go, Umapik Chad. Right, he'll take out one of these contracts that we wrote for him, v'tarif l'kuchot, and he will take away from buyers that were subsequent to him. V'amalei the balchob, and then go back to Levi, Shimon will say, listen to me, shofli di'ikumba, don't take the property from me now, just let me live in it again for another couple of years. V'hadar, and then come back, tartirfan, and come and claim the, make your credit claim again against me. U'meipikachrina, and then I'll take out the other document that you wrote that I told him I lost it, but I really didn't. I have both of them now. I'll take it out. V'hadar azil tarif l'kuchot achrini, and then he'll go and take it away from subsequent wires again. So now the Gemara wants to know, okay, somebody has two documents here. That is Shimon, who purchased the property from Reuben. But what about Levi? Levi has to make a claim the first time that it was a credit outstanding, and he wants to make the claim and take it away from the Shimon. But now when he shows up the second time, where does he have a document to make a second claim over here? We know how Shimon can make a second claim because we wrote him a second contract, possibly, because he may have been lying about losing his contract. But where does Levi, the creditor, come along with a second document? And that's what the Gemara asks now. Once the Malveh comes and makes his claim, and we pay him his claim, we rip up his contract. If you think we don't rip it up, that's not true. Rav Nachman tells us what the procedure is in Beis Din. Kol tirfa. So any tirfa is a document that allows the creditor to go anywhere and search for the debtor's property in order to make a claim to repay his debts. So once he gets that tirfa, once he gets that document from Beis Din has to write in that document that they ripped up the shtar milvet, that they ripped up the document of credit. Because they don't rip it up, then he has two documents that allow him to make a claim. So first of all, they rip up the shtar milvet, and then they write him this tirfa that allows him to go after the debtor's property. B'chol adrachta is the next stage. The next stage is where Beis Din gives him the rights after he finds the property, and he gives this tirfa to a Beis Din. Beis Din then gives him the right to use that property to repay the loan. So when they write him a document, adrachta, that gives him the rights to take this property as the repayment of the loan, they rip up the tirfa. They rip up the document that allows him to go search for the debtor's property. Because if they don't, again, he has rights in two documents, and we don't want that. So then he says, any adrachta, look to you by the Quran and the tirfa, that we ripped up the tirfa, love adrachta, it's not a good adrachta. But choshuma, the last stage is when once he's granted the rights to get his debts paid out of this property, then Beis Din does a shuma. They do an assessment of the value of the property. So they say, well, once they, any document that is the assessing the value of the debtor's property, it has to be written in it that they ripped up the adrachta, the document that gives him the right to a claim on this property. Then if it's not in there, lav shuma, it's not a good shuma. So there's a procedure in Beis Din, there's a clear procedure within Beis Din that anytime you give rights to a creditor, you have to rip up the previous document of rights. So how does this creditor have the ability, Levi, in our case, have the ability to come to Shimon twice and make a claim? Even if he has a partnership with Shimon, where does he have a document that he can show in Beis Din to make himself two claims? So when it says, Latzricha, the Aka'ati Mikoach Avate, he comes from the power of his father. So what does that mean? I'm related. So what's the case here? The case is an interesting case, something that we've bumped into before. Let's start again. Reuven has a piece of property that he sells to Shimon. Levi comes and says, listen, I'm sorry to tell you this, but Reuven really never owned the property. He stole it from my father. And I have edim to the fact that he stole it from my father. He shows up in Beis Din with these edim, says, and he proves that Reuven took it or stole it from his father, belonged to his father's, and Reuven has no evidence that he purchased it from their father's. So now he gets the property from Shimon because it was stolen. Reuven sold them stolen property. Now, Shimon has recourse against Reuven because Reuven sold them stolen property. So that recourse, he can go after subsequent buyers to himself. From Reuven, he can go after those buyers. So now, in this case, there's no shtar. There's no Levi who's coming to make a claim. He's not making a claim, a debt claim, a credit claim, where he has a document. Here he's making a simple claim of ownership, and his claim of ownership is based on Edim. So over here, he can bring Edim, and then 5 years later, he can bring the same Edim again and make the same claim if they have a knunya, if they make a partnership between them, and Shimon says, leave me in the property, and you'll come back and make the same claim again in 5 years with Edim, because over there, he doesn't need a document. He doesn't need a credit document. So that's the case. So Mar says, So I'm a Yarav Achami Difti Ravina Valamale de May Marley the Balchov Shofli Bahai Ara Vikumba. So why do you need a partnership here? To pull off this stunt, why does he need a partnership here? Why does he need the creditor to leave him in the property over here by the Nigzal, supposedly the Nigzal Levi, who says, leave it, you know, it's my property because my father's owned it. Why does he have to make a partnership with Levi, Shimon, in order to extract money from Reuven twice? Why does he just take that out from him twice? He has a document twice. You can just say, Tarif. Why don't we just worry that he has two documents? He'll come one time, he'll take away from the kuchot based on the fact that he's lost the property. 5 years from now, he'll come out again. He said, look, I lost the property, it's not with me. Bring out the next document, say I can collect from these the kuchot that are subsequent to me again. Vahadur tarif. My says, Imkain, Nafishale Bali Dinim. Now the people are gonna figure it out. They're gonna figure it out because he's only going to be able to do this in a short period of time. He's got to do it quickly after the property is taken from him. If he does that, people are going to smell something fishy if he's trying to do this twice. So that's what he says. That's what Rishbam says. People will figure out that he's playing a game here, or that he's doing it twice because it's the same parties. Everybody's the same parties here, and it's the same transaction, and everything's duplicated. So when it's all duplicated, it's the same transaction, people are going to work it out. When it involves three parties or multiple parties, people are less likely to figure it out, and the lukuchot are different, and therefore maybe he'll get away with pulling it off. So Mer says, V'lichtov l'haishtara ma'ayo, v'lichtov tavra l'mocher. So he says, listen, why don't we write a shtar to this lokeach? He said he lost it. We'll write him a shtar. And then we'll write a shovar. We'll write a receipt for the seller that says this. Ko shtare difkun alara da psulin. Dvar min difok bizmana da. That all contracts that are written over here on this property are invalid, except for the one that I have in front of me right now. Meaning that, why don't we have this as the solution? The buyer will rewrite him a contract, a full-fledged contract with recourse in it. But then we'll also write a receipt to the seller that says, listen, any shtar that the lokeach shows up with is meaningless except for this one shtar. And in the receipt, they'll give the exceptional case of the shtar, where it's okay. That one shtar will be fine to collect from. So now we've empowered the lokeach with the new shtar, but we've invalidated any other shtar that lokeach has. So that sounds like a great solution to our problem here. If we just denote within the shovar, we denote within the receipt what the issues are. Now, the Rabbanan came to Rav Papa and made this suggestion. Why can't we use this answer? Some people say, they said before Rav Ashi, they said, Zotomeret, Ein Kotvim Shovar. Your answer is that we don't write receipts. The reason that this solution is not a good solution is because we believe that you can't write receipts. And receipts are never a good solution. Because we're afraid that the receipt will get lost. If the receipt gets lost, then a person has a full-fledged claim against the individual, and he has no way to defend himself against the claim. So Shofar, we just don't write receipts. We have to deal with the fact that everything that's going to be transacted is going to be written into contracts, and there are going to be outstanding contracts with receipts against them. So that's the conclusion. Back to the Rabbanon, who presented them with this conclusion, and says, no, Be'alma kotvin Shofar, in general, we do write receipts. Over here, there's an exceptional case, and this is why we won't write a receipt in this case. The dimazu balchov, because they have a problem here, because maybe the balchov, their creditor will come, v'tarif minei, to lokeach, and we'll take it away from lokeach. Azel ihu, then lokeach will go, v'tarif l'kuchot, and he'll take away from other buyers. So in our case, again, we have Reuven selling property to Shimon, and Levi's the creditor. Levi is Reuven's creditor. Reuven has no money, so then he goes to Shimon for the property, and he takes the property away from Shimon. Shimon says, well, I have recourse here. I want to get my property out from the other buyers who were subsequent to me. So that's what he does. A tarif kuchot. V'shovar gabi l'kuchot leka. The problem is now when Shimon comes to other buyers that were subsequent to him and says, here's my recourse contract with recourse in it. Give me my money or give me the land back. I have rights before you. My rights preempt you. And therefore, I can take the property away from you. And they don't have this shovar. They don't have this receipt. And since who's the receipt? The receipt's with the seller, with Reuven. They don't have this receipt to show him. So the Gemara says, Lukuchot lava mari da'ara hadre. Wait, in the end, don't the buyers go back to the original owner, to Reuven, and say, listen, what's going on over here? They're going to have to speak to him. So when it says, in the interim, between the time that the property's been taken away from them by Shimon, until they get to Reuven to solve what's going on or what's happening here, Shomit b'achol pere. He'll end up eating some fruits, he'll eat some of the value of the property. And we know that once gezel that still exists, I mean property that's still around, you can get back from gzela. But when it comes to gzela that's already eaten and consumed, it's very hard to get it back. So we're afraid of that. I said, another possibility is that these subsequent buyers purchased the land without recourse. And if they didn't purchase without recourse, they're not going to go back to the mocher. They're not going to go back to the original seller to speak to them about the shofar because they don't have any recourse. So they're not going to speak to them. They won't know about the shofar. Wait, you're saying shofar receipt's not good for Mecca Chumemkar situations. Why should it be good in debt situations also? You have the same problem. It says, wait, if you believe that a shofar is not going to work for Mecca Chumemkar, then also by Halva Nami it shouldn't work. Because they have the same problem. Who has the shofar? Who has the shofar is the debtor. The debtor is the one holding on to this receipt. And you have purchasers of his property that were subsequent to the claim of the creditor. And when he comes, the creditor comes and takes away their property, they don't have a receipt either. They're going to have to go back to the lovet, or they bought it without recourse, and they're not going to go back to him. So why doesn't the same situation present itself when it comes to alva like it does by Mecca Chumemkar? Mar says, well, there's a difference. Because Hotam Zuzei Masik Amrei Paisei Balcho Bezuzei. They say, wait, when it comes to creditors, creditors are supposed to get money. And when they're supposed to get money, they're going to say, listen, before we give up our land, we're going back to the Baal Chob and see if we can pay him off or give him money to get him off this land. So they will talk to the debtor prior to giving up their land in order to ensure that there's no money to be paid here or there's no way to shake this guy off. Hacha, in this case, the guy has a claim by Ara Mesik. The purchaser, who is Shimon over here, bought the property, has a priority claim because he purchased land. And they know that someone who purchased land wants the land. He wants to get land, and he's going to go and get that land from subsequent buyers after him. He's not going to be willing to accept cash instead. So they say, you know what, it's worthless for us to fight him. Give him the land, and then we'll try to work it out. Figure out what's going on with Reuven. So the buyers, or in these cases, the subsequent buyers have a different mindset. When it comes to a loan, when it comes to a creditor, their first thought is, listen, this is a money issue, not a land issue, so we're not going to give up our land until we're sure there's no money here. And once they go back to the debtor, they'll get the information about the receipt. On the other hand, when it comes to buyers that are subsequent to or other buyers that were that preceded them or had priority to them, over there they don't think about the fact, oh, I have to go back and the money. They know that their land's gone. The other person bought land. He wants land. He's going to take their land. So they give up their land or let it go, and then they go find out what's going on over here. They do it only subsequent to the fact. So because of that, there's a difference. So therefore, we will write receipts by creditors and debtors, because over there, when we write a shofar, even parties who will be affected, buyers afterwards will be affected, will always go back to the debtor and they'll get the information. Or they'll get it fast enough that it won't affect them. On the other hand, when it comes to Mecca Chumemkar, the buyer's mentality is very different, because he says, well, I have a prior buyer, he really has a good claim, I will check it out, but I know he's going to take the land, so let him take the land now, and then we'll figure out what's going on afterwards. So that's the mentality, or the difference in that mentality would make a difference in whether we write receipts or don't write receipts when it comes to credit, where we do write receipts, and by Mecca Chumemkar, we do not write receipts. Now, the Re over here asks a question that, wait a minute, the problem with writing a receipt by the loan should be something different also. Guess what? This creditor, if we write a receipt that's in like an empty receipt that says this debtor can whip this out at any time and say, I don't have any loans with you except for this one document, then any loans that he makes subsequent to this point in time will also be subject to this receipt. So what are you going to do? So he says, he won't remember in the future when he lends the money, he won't remember about this receipt. And now, and now we're going to have a problem with other lenders. They're not going to want her to lend because they're going to all of a sudden get trapped in this receipt issue. You have seed. If he loses, he loses. So the Re makes another differentiation between Halva and Mecca Chumemkar. When it comes to, we have a risk in both cases here, that when you write this open receipt that says that the only contract outstanding between these two parties is such and such, that means that if there are transactions after this fact, those transactions will be mitigated by the receipt. Plus, if there are loans after this fact, they will also be mitigated by the receipt. So in both these cases, writing a shofar is a very dangerous thing, because then it, in the future, it wipes out anything that could happen in the future. So here the Re differentiates. He says, by loans, that's true. By loans, we do not want to do something like this, because if in the future we create a disadvantage, if we write a shofar and we create a disadvantage to the lenders, in the future they'll stop lending. We're going to create a problem in the marketplace where we're going to freeze up loans, meaning that we're going to make the markets going to become illiquid because nobody's going to lend because of this fear. So over there, we worry about the broader impact, social impact of writing a shofar and having the risk that a creditor will lose all his subsequent loans. Well, there we say no shofar. By Mecca Chumemkar, we say, listen, what's going to happen if we do write him the shofar and the seller sells him another piece of property and forgets about this global receipt that he has, who loses? There's only one loser here, and that's the seller. It's not something that affects the marketplace as a whole. It's something that he didn't take care of. He wasn't careful about himself. And what, people aren't going to sell property anymore because of that? No. This is something that was unique to the circumstance. When it comes to loans, people look at that as being some sort of breakdown in the trust or the marketplace, and therefore they're going to make it illiquid. So there, the Re also differentiates over here between loans and Mekach HaMemkar because of this difference in the nature of loans versus the nature of Mekach HaMemkar. This also points out here just a difficulty in the whole logic here, which is that the logic is that the people are going to be, the lukuchot, the subsequent buyers, are going to be to have their property taken away by this creditor or this previous buyer. It's almost like they are becoming passive here all of a sudden. They say, listen, oh yeah, he comes, let me have the property, it's my property now. And they go, okay, sure. And then they're going to go check out on it. No, we know that people aren't that way. That's not the nature of people. People's nature is that they say, listen, go to the debtor and check it out with the debtor. If the debtor says he has no money, has no karka, and he has no other claims against you, then we'll talk. But first, let's go to the debtor. Why would I just willy-nilly give up my property and say, go ahead and have it? The Re leaves that as a somewhat of a tzarechiyun. Says maybe it's the subsequent buyers are unsure about the halacha here, about whether they can pay him off with money or whether they can go back, and that's what allows this to happen. But it is a difficult form of logic. The other thing that Tosos deals with, this is much earlier on in the sugya, is this whole case here about shtar mekach. So why don't we allow you to replicate a shtar mekach here with achrayut? Well, even if you have no achrayut and you replicate the shtar mekach, why don't we worry about the fact that there might have been a transaction in between the first and second shtar? You have one shtar in the beginning, then there was another transaction where the seller bought back the property from the buyer, and now he has another document that says, oh, I bought it back from you. So now we're writing him a new document. From this, Tosus concludes here that when we write him a second shtar mekach, we write it from the original date. We backdate it to the original date. Because if you don't backdate it to the original date, then you do put the seller at risk for any transactions that happened in between. So when we replicate, Tosus comes to the conclusion here, when we replicate the document, shtar mekach umemkar, we replicate it and we write it from the original date in order to prevent there being any fraud in the period that's in between these two. Whereas later on in the Gemara, when the Gemara tries to come up with a solution that we're going to write him a receipt that says all documents are invalid except for this document, over there it's clear the Gemara means that you write it from the second date or the date that's present in front of us. Because they're writing a Shovar receipt that says that this is the only valid contract from today's date. That means that even contracts that are preceding this point are going to be invalid, so then it won't put the mocher, won't put the seller at risk at all. And therefore, so earlier on the Gemara is saying when we replicate documents, we're talking about replicating it from the original or backdating it to the original date. Over here, later on, when we're saying replicate it and do it with the receipt, there we're talking about using the current date rather than the previous date. Tosus then continues, we won't spend a lot of time on this, but Tosus also discusses what's the problem of having multiple shtarot. What happens if a mocher pulls out a shtar, lokeach pulls out a shtar, who has better rights, who has to bring proofs over here. Tosus discusses that in order to straighten out exactly who's at risk here and why would we write a document, or is there a risk to us replicating documents. Okay, here we're just going to finish up the Gemara. The Gemara is going to deal with the next line. Amar chutz miachrayut shebo. That you have to write it excluding any recourse. When you rewrite this or replicate the document of Mekach HaMemkar, you write it without recourse. Hey, how do you do that? How do you leave out recourse? So Amar Rav Nachman says, they write in the shtar like this, shtar denan, lo mikvei bay, lo mi b'shabdei, v'lo mi b'nei charei. This document does not give you entitlement to take away from encumbered property, unencumbered property, but rather it's just evidence to the fact that there was a sale. It's just evidence that there was such a sale between this buyer and seller, but nothing more. It's just evidence that there were Eidei Mesira here and there was such a transaction. But beyond that, it gives you no rights. So Amar Avram, Amar Zotomerik, from this you can conclude, Achrayut Tolot Soferhu. If you did not specifically exclude the Achrayut and did not write explicitly that the Achrayut are excluded, had you run nothing in there, that would mean that you would have gotten recourse. That indicates to us that any document, whether it has recourse written into it or does not have it written into it, we say it's Tolot Sofer. If they leave it out, it's a mistake, and everybody is entitled to recourse. Why? How do we know that from here? Because Rav Nachman's demanding of you, when you want to say there is no recourse, that you have to explicitly write no recourse into the document. Otherwise, the default situation would be that he does have recourse. So time dichtav lehachi, because only if he wrote no recourse. Halokadav lehachi hachi gabi. If he didn't write this exclusion, then it would have been the natural or the default would be that he could go collect and he would have recourse. Rav Ashi disagrees. Amar achriyot lav tot soferhu. Rav Ashi disagrees. Says that's not the case. that achrayut is not a taut sofer. If you leave out achrayut, it's no good. Umay chutz me achrayut shabo. What does it mean? No recourse in here. Tolokti be achrayut. That's what it means. Not like Rav Nachman. I disagree with the way Rav Nachman learns. Rav Nachman says you write specifically that there is no achrayut. I say you just leave it out. You don't write any achrayut. You leave it blank. When you leave it blank, there is no achrayut because achrayut is lav taut sofer. It's not a mistake. So, there was this woman, she gave money to an individual to purchase the Mizban La'ara, to purchase land on her behalf. He went out and purchased her property without recourse. Actually, the commander of Nachman, they came before Rav Nachman, basically, he says to him, listen, she made you an agent. She did it, so she wants you to do it for her benefit, not to her detriment. Over here, you purchase property without recourse. Who purchases property without recourse? That's a very poor purchase. Nobody would do such a thing. Now that you did it, you disadvantaged the woman. Now you're going to have to compensate her. How are you going to compensate her? Like this. Zil zavna minei. You're going to go buy it from the person you promised that you're going to buy it from with her money. Shlo b'achrayut. You have to buy it from him without recourse because that's what you committed to do. But you are going to buy it. B'hadar zavna ni'ala b'achrayut. But then you are going to sell it to the woman with recourse. That means now if the original seller comes back or for some reason the creditors of the seller or someone else comes and takes away the property from this woman, right, she'll have no claim on that mocher, but she will have a claim on you because you're going to give her recourse and you're going to protect her. So because you over here did something that was inappropriate in purchasing for her, we're going to put you on the hook. You're responsible for this bad decision that you made. And being responsible for that bad decision, now you're going to have to take on the recourse that you didn't purchase for her from the mocher. You're going to have to replace the mocher in giving her recourse. Okay, we'll stop over here.